All right, let's move on, if you're ready, John, to the community board meeting, which is happening tomorrow, 1:30, in the Town Hall Supper Room. And the first thing on the list here, the 5G telecom tower, which is due to go up somewhere around the, which is proposed to go up somewhere around the water tank up the hill there?
Yeah, there's the bus shelter on Nurrie Avenue,
yeah.
And it's almost exactly next to that, in between that and the main road.
So I talked about this with Gabrielle Parson last week, our community board chairperson. We just mentioned it, and I immediately got, I didn't see it at the time, but when I looked back, I got a Facebook message from a listener saying, "No way!" So,
they do.
Hell no! These are the precise words I got. So, I suspect there'll be some opposition to this concept, John.
Yeah, well, 5G has traditionally been something that the conspiracy theorists have gone overboard on. So,
are you going to say conspiracy theorist?
Well, there's quite a lot of work that seems to have been done on safety aspects, and that's quite a large part of the case that they're making in the community board agenda.
I think most people who are suspicious of corporations and 5G, especially when combined, are not going to believe a word that a corporation says. And there's plenty of past experience where corporations have gathered up evidence that suits their case that's not very comprehensive.
Well, that's why conspiracy theories do so well, because there's been so much bad science in the past that people are suspicious.
Because there have actually been conspiracies, yes. That's what you're saying. Yeah, they do happen. I don't want to get into the science because I don't know that much, but I do know that we're electrical beings, and electrical things have fields around them, and this is
more powerful than the previous ones.
Yeah,
you get better coverage, because one of the upsides of it is that the areas like along the beach at Lorenzen Bay, Cox Bay, doesn't have any signal at the moment, but it will, most of it will with this new tower.
So that's for Vodafone. If you're not on Vodafone, you can get a signal down there.
I thought this was 5G for everyone. Am I wrong? But
no, I don't know. I thought it was Vodafone was involved. But it might be that they're doing
it. I thought they were sharing these things. But
you could be right.
I could be wrong as well.
Yeah, we're so well informed, John.
Yeah, well, maybe that's something to ask tomorrow afternoon. Who will benefit from it? Is it just the people, customers of the firm putting it up, or is it everybody with a cell phone in their pocket? Indeed, not just a cell phone, but using computers as well.
Interagency Committee on the Health Effects of Non-Ionizing Fields from John. Okay, that's all right. We haven't got time to read that whole thing while I'm on the air.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So we're saying
these things, you can spot flaws in it. It seems to me that these things are being so widely used that there ought to be better studies available than there are, and the same applies to fluoride as well. And a few other things that a lot of people are being exposed to them, but we don't have actually conclusive studies of what that's done to their populations in terms of all the things you might suffer from as a result. And I'm not an epidemiologist, so I don't understand why not.
And there's a lot of there was always muddying of the waters and biased reporting from the corporations and the technology companies, and it is, you actually have to work quite hard to get through to it, and it's very hard to put aside your suspicions and just try to be objective about it.
But governments all over the world seem to have done these safety reports and concluded that there wasn't any evidence.
Yeah, but we know how easy it is to produce.
Well, that's why there's conspiracy theories, because the are doubts, and sometimes those doubts have more basis than others. So, yeah, read the safety papers and come to your own conclusions.
Yeah, so sometimes there are conspiracy facts and not just theories, so that's the problem right there. All right, so anyway, you can learn more, but you could look at the council agenda. John, is there a link to that somewhere, aside from the council website?
Well, if you go to the council website and look for the council meetings and down there Raglan Community Board, then you'll find that agenda.
Okay.
It's also linked from a story that's on Raglan 23, So that's the summary of what we're looking at, the community board agenda.
Okay.
So that's got a link to it. There's various other places as well, but Raglan 23 is probably the easiest place to find it.
Yeah, it'll be up the top there somewhere. All right, so yeah, and I mentioned that because clearly John and I aren't that well equipped with the facts here at the moment. We just know that it's going to be mentioned in the community board meeting. Talking to Gabrielle last week, it felt like it's kind of a consultation, but not really. That's my wording. Like, they're here to tell us it's happening, but I don't think it will be very easy to stop if that's what people want to do. So that's about all I can add to that. Moving on to the wharf, structural repairs, pontoons and walkways. Just been talking with Shaw Mead, who Ecoast did the, this company did the research into the state of the life and contaminants around the wharf. So we kind of already talked about that. John, do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, we're still waiting for a decision on the resource consents on that. So they've applied for permission to cut the Pahutukawa trees, and they've applied to the district council for that. So my guess is the district council will approve it. Regional council has been asking more questions, so it's going to be maybe a bit more difficult for that one.
The regional, the work that Shaw did that will inform the regional council's questions. There's no unique life forms anywhere that are going to be obliterated by this work. Yeah, generally it's pretty low impact.
Well, the main problem is that there's so many heavy metals down there that if you start stirring them up, they're going to possibly affect the rest of the harbour. So that's one of the major issues.
He said it was in the tidal zone, so they can actually, when it's low tide, just dig it up and take it away.
Well, the pontoon is going to be out in water that's going to be there all the time. That's the point of having a pontoon, that you can actually moor your boat there and it's not high and dry.
But are the contaminants there, or are they right directly under the wharf?
Well, they're going to
You're not Shaw Mead. Why am I asking you?
Well, they're going to be putting in the supports for the pontoon out in the deep water.
Okay.
So that's where they've been doing the surveys and found those heavy metals. So,
I'm missing something here, because when I did ask him about it, he said that, because I said, how do you pull stuff out of the water like that? And he said, the stuff he was thinking obviously was up in the tidal zone.
Because under the wharf itself is never exposed at low tide, and the same for the area where the end of the pontoon is going to be. Most of the pontoon is going to be over those rocks. But
okay, we're once again in an area where we probably don't know enough. I want to see the working drawings to see exactly what they're doing.
Well, there's about 20 or 30 documents that have been produced, and they're all available on a Dropbox page.
Have you read all them, John?
I've skimmed through them.
You've skimmed through them. But the regional council will have to read them, and that's the basis of their questions. And maybe they'll have additional requests to the construction project to make it safe for the environment, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the answer is not when you're sinking your piles for that pontoon, you need to avoid stirring up the sediment on the bottom.
Yeah, which is pretty hard. Isn't it?
Well, it's soft mud. That's the problem.
So. No, I mean, I'm saying it's hard not to stir it up.
Yeah. So they need some way of containing that. So my guess is that's the main concern of regional council.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll find out in some weeks' time.
I'm rather surprised that people aren't objecting at the Pahutukawa trees being chopped. But it seems to be accepted as what happens to Pahutukawa trees. So.
No, the way we object to that is we wait till the person's cutting it, and then everyone gets excited and rushes down there.
Okay,
that's our plan. That's not a plan, but that's what I've observed happening. The third thing on your list, Whangaroa Harbour strategy. I see you've picked out a little phrase here: rebuild historical jetty off Cliff Street.
Yeah, this is one that was in the draft, and it's now in the next version. So I'm rather surprised that that's in there, because again, it's not too clear how that's going to work.
The jetty.
Well, I'm not too clear what it's for, really, whether it's going to be a marina at the end of it, because we're not proposing, I think, to have the steamers coming down from Onehunga again. So, you know, I'm not clear what it's being used for. So I put it in there because it's something of a mystery, and I was hoping that somebody might spot it and say, I know what this is all about.
So for people who don't know, because it's not there now, Is that the first original way that boats came into the harbour and offloaded goods?
The third, I think. But yeah, 1889 it was built.
And it was off Cliff Street, sort of opposite, is it opposite that intersection?
Yeah, by the bowling opposite club? James Street.
Opposite James Street, okay. And it used to go out quite a long way, didn't it? Because they had to get out into the channel.
If you go down there, you'll see the museums put a photo of how it used to look.
Okay.
So you can see how it used to be. It used to go out about a quarter of a kilometre to the main channel, and that's what they're suggesting might be rebuilt, and I'm not too clear why it was going to be rebuilt, because there's not much parking around there, so it doesn't solve the parking problem for boaters.
If it still existed and was a bit dilapidated, I'd understand retaining, you know, maintaining it, but rebuilding the whole thing from scratch, I don't think there's any money for that, is there, John?
Well, they seem to keep finding these stacks of money.
Was there stacks? I just visualised our stacks of money lurking around council that no one realised was there.
Well, it seems to be coming from Three Waters, which at the last community board meeting, one of the council staff described as a bribe from government.
Yeah, which they're happy to accept, as always. Okay, so, and the other thing, feedback included for the Whangaroa Harbour study, horse riding access to beaches. This is a controversial topic. John, why did you highlight that?
There's quite a lot of people who are supporting horses on beaches, but equally there's quite a lot of people opposing it. So,
I'm going to be really blunt about this. I'm the optics of this whole situation, that's what political commentators in the national scene would say, the optics of a group of people, basically they're sort of fighting council, but they're really fighting local iwi about what's happening on that beach, and I'm uncomfortable with that. That's not good optics. We've just had the promise by council to start the process of returning the airfield land, and almost universally throughout the community that's positive and everyone's supportive of that. But then in this issue we've got, unfortunately, a group of white people mostly opposing local iwi about an issue about whether horses can ride on the beach, and that's, I'm not that comfortable with that. I'm not involved, but it just doesn't look...
Yeah, it's one of these things where they're saying we always have done, so why shouldn't we carry on doing it?
Well, and the answer is because more people are doing it and it's ruining the beach and the shellfish and all that. And there's poo everywhere.
I highlighted it there because it is a controversial issue, and it would be good if people on both sides know that it is possibly going to come up on the community board agenda. Certainly it's going to come up on future agendas.
Well, that's within the Whangaroa Harbour strategy. I don't think they're going to, at the community board meeting, I don't think they'll talk down to that level of detail.
Well, you can never tell quite what's going to come up at community board meetings. And if it's mentioned somewhere in there, then somebody might decide to bring it up, and possibly at the public forum, because there is a public forum for half an hour or so before the meeting starts. So,
just to update people on that actual issue, the horse community found that there was a procedural problem with the way the council made its rule to not have horses on the beaches.
Yeah, council's not very good at following rules, so...
they're good at making them. So they were able to get an injunction. Was it a court injunction?
Yeah.
And the horses are currently allowed on the beach down there. The council is taking the moves to... tie up that loophole, and so in a while that loophole will be gone.
Well, it might be gone because they need to go through a consultation process, so that's when this is really going to come up.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Because they need to amend their bylaw and do it according to what the law says rather than what Waikato District Council thinks it might get away with.
Okay, all right, so there's more to come on that one, folks. Stand by. Can we move on to the next bit? The toilets have been wrapped with beautiful pictures, John.
Yes. So there's Pahutukawa trees in bloom all year now down at Cliff Street.
Yeah, so those are the two silvery-looking toilets that arrived a year or two ago?
2019, I think, yeah.
Okay, a year or three. They were promised at the time that they would be wrapped. Now they are wrapped.
Well, we were promised at the time that we'd get local artists doing a design on them, and now they've been wrapped in a sort of photographic design, yeah.
All right. Well, it's not a biggie, really.
It's just good to note that it has finally been done after three or more years.
I will blame COVID for this one. We'll let them get away with blaming COVID. Oh, John, you're trolling me with this next one. Soccer field flooding. Rainwater has and will always be an issue in this area. You're trolling me, aren't you?
Well, that's what it says. That's a quote from the council agenda, and basically they're saying, hard luck, this is what happens down there.
Well, it's not true, because ever since the campground stopped pumping water onto the soccer fields, we've had the driest soccer fields of pretty much all the fields in the region. And I know this because it used to be my job. Here Aaron goes again, banging on about this, but it used to be my job to shift the games when it was wet. And since 2019, 2020, 2021, and this year, that many years, the only time it's flooded was last year. It flooded because the pump failed by the skate bowl, and this year it flooded because for some reason the campground had, I had promises made that things were going to be sorted out, and then there was still a pipe pumping water onto the sandbank next to the soccer field, and it, and they started, for some reason they were pumping more water this year, and I don't know what the reason for that was, but that flooded out across the soccer fields again. But yeah, that's been changed now. But we went through a 3-year period of not having to shift any games at all. So, and I keep getting, I get a lot of patronizing attitude through this, and from people who don't realize that I've like worked in the building industry, and I understand about running projects, and I understand about what information comes back from site, and what can be done, and I'm super unimpressed with the whole thing. But also, this is my last year of coaching soccer. My kids are growing up, and I hope to leave this issue behind. But that statement is wrong. Rainwater has only been an issue in the area because the campground was pumping loads of water onto the soccer fields.
Okay. They do also mention that in the agenda as well, but then there's this sort of tail-end thing saying, you know, you can't expect it to work perfectly because this is low-lying ground and no, water drains there.
And we don't expect it to work perfectly, but we do expect the campground not to pump water onto the soccer fields. So it's, you've successfully trolled me, John. Can we move on to the next thing?
If you like.
I'd like. The Wee Nearer Walkway. Actually, there's not much to say about that. It's in the design phase at the moment, isn't it?
Well, it puzzles me that there's not much to say about it, because it seems that the council staff have actually seen draft designs, and yet nobody in Raglan seems to have seen them, including our councillor.
I presume at some point they'll come back to the community with something. Maybe they're trying to just massage it into shape before they come to the public. I mean, I kind of would expect that to happen.
Yeah, well, as I say, we're in the dark, so we don't really know. We'll maybe find out in due course what's been going on.
When we say we near a walkway, folks, we're talking about the walkway between the jetty and the bridge across to Papahua on this side.
Yeah. Which council's renamed as We're Near a Walkway.
Well, it never really had a name. It was just the walkway.
Yeah.
So
the walkway to the footbridge.
It's likely to end up much wider and with a handrail. That's my prediction. So we'll see.
And rather higher, because they're talking about flooding during high tides as well.
Is it?
Well, it depends how much you think sea level is going to rise, but, and how long you think this is going to last.
Okay, good point.
Because this was built in 1915, 1916, so it's already been around for over a century.
Yeah, yep. The next thing on your list, Waikawhai Walkway at Laurentian Bay. What is the Waikawhai Walkway?
Well, this is another new name that they've come up with as well. So this is the walkway that goes from Cambrai Road down to Laurentian Bay.
So there's a Waikawhai subdivision. And a Waikawhai place, but that's...
Which is further up that valley, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well,
same valley, but further down that valley.
What do locals call it? Do we know?
I think the walkway. They call it the Cambrai Road, Laurentian Bay Walkway.
Yeah, yeah. That walkway there, that's what we call it. And the locals who live around there all know about it. We used to live around there, and we used to use it a lot. This was a slightly weird one. The community was concerned that there were a reinforcing rod sticking out of the ground there, and that the retaining wall by the it's not really a creek, is it?
It's kind of a creek. It's a Waikawhai stream, yeah.
But it's been dug out by a digger, that bit. It's dead straight. Anyway, they were concerned about that. So
it's been filled in, I think, rather than taken out.
Oh, I see.
It was eroding up until the 1970s, and then they did some, what they call reclamation, to take the shoreline further out.
So the members of the community went to the council to say, hey, can we do something about this? And in the process discovered that the council was working on a plan to do something about it. I guess the council's kind of been caught halfway through working something out, and the people down there don't like what they worked out. The council plan was to close that walkway and instead provide access from, if you go up to the intersection of Bayview Road and Cambray Road, there's a walkway between two houses and take you down to the top of a cliff. I'm not sure. I think there may be a walk along the cliff edge till you get down to Lorenzen Bay. All I've got is an aerial photograph to look at with a few lines on it. So, John, is that what you think they're suggesting as well?
I think the important words in what you've just said are up and down. So you climb the hill and then go down the hill. So I think people are objecting to having all that extra climbing and descending to do.
Yeah. Do you think there's a good reason for council to close the existing walkway? They're saying it's getting flooded, but so are the houses around it.
Well, that water's going down there, and that they were also sorting out a problem further up that stream where it's been flooding another property. So they're putting in a culvert and extra drainage up there.
So that's independent of people using the walkway next to it, though, isn't it? Where's this going, do you think?
All it says in the community board agenda is that they'll consult with the community when the project progresses.
I guess this is an example of staff who don't live out here doing a thing that seems perfectly reasonable to them. But if they literally had a house in that area, they wouldn't have made that decision. And certainly, I think that's the opinion of the people who live around there. We'll skip over Manu Bay Breakwater because that's just we're waiting for a consultant's report. Local bus. John, you'll be excited about this, the bus, internal bus service in Raglan. Consultation time at the moment. Do you want to talk about it?
If you look in the local paper, you'll find on page 14 that there's a questionnaire to fill in. Seems to me that it's a pity it's directed to existing bus users rather than potential bus users, because it seems to me that buses are the solution to quite a few of the problems we've got, like parking and congestion on the single lane bridge, and of course climate change as well. So it seems to me it should have been sold from that point of view rather than do you want a way of getting to a doctor's or something, because most people are quite happy to drive to a doctor's and there's quite a large car park there, so they can cope with that.
Well, they are looking for quite a wide kind of a really wide, diverse perspective on this issue and ideas too, because you could just say, okay, we're going to run it from the wharf, jiggle around and get out to Whale Bay, and we'll do it every hour. But there's so many other variations you could have. Like, you could have more buses during summer and less during winter, especially heading out to the beaches and the bays. There could be all sorts of other variations that people haven't thought of yet. So they are interested in what people have got to say. And there's also, John mentioned it's in the paper, it's also, if you go to the community board Facebook page, maybe the website, you can get a link to an online version of the questionnaire as well.
Yep. I think both of those, you can get the link to it, yes. But it's a question of persuading people to fill it in, because, as I say, if it's directed at existing bus users, that's about 2% of the population, whereas those who could benefit from it are virtually the whole population. So, you know, it depends how you look at it and what you think it should be. Because at the moment, they're mostly talking in terms of a 12-seater minibus, which isn't going to solve many of those problems. Whereas if you looked at a much bigger bus and more frequent, and the fear is that they're going to be running empty buses, but if you design it properly and make it attractive, then I think people are going to see that as beneficial in terms of all those three things that I mentioned and other issues as well.
I think people see empty buses and think buses are a waste of time, but different times of day you have a different load on the bus, and you only buy one bus. You don't have a series of buses sitting there depending on how many people think you're going to go on. So you always get the biggest bus that you think you're going to need. So of course it's going to look empty. I just saw an empty bus go past right now. So of course it's going to look empty some of the time. So I don't think that's a very good way of judging it, but it is. As I just said, you see it going past like an empty bus again. But
you only see it four times a day, and most people don't want to wait 4 hours for the next bus. So.
Yeah. So as John keeps saying, if you want buses to work, you have to do them properly and don't do half-half, you know, halfway solutions.
I keep telling the story about the first time I visited Auckland and travelled on the trains, and they were virtually empty. But they ran every hour, and now they run every 10 or 20 minutes. And up until COVID, they had problems with overcrowding.
So. Yeah, they were too successful in Auckland, because once they got a good service going, people, and with the parking situation in Auckland, of course, as you can imagine, I have a friend who lives up there who used the train. It's very popular. I think we're moving on, John. I want to skip over number 12.
Yep. You did talk to Gabrielle on Friday about the Coastal Reserve stakeholder meeting, which is coming up on the 13th of September.
So oh, did no I miss doubt, that one earlier? Yes.
No doubt you'll remind people about that when we get nearer the date.
Yeah, 7 p.m. at the Surf Club. That's going to be, folks. That could be an interesting meeting, because there hasn't been local engagement on the coastal reserves for a few years now. So there could be all sorts of different groups wanting to have their say there. Back to the community board charter. You've highlighted something here. The community board suggested, quote unquote, option for the chair to be appointed to a manager position with higher or extra pay. So remuneration for community board members is notoriously low if they are to genuinely spend time working on behalf of the community. A lot of the time only retired people can do it. And I remember Roger Gallagher used to do it, and I think he got fed up with just how much work he was doing and stepped down. So it is an issue. What do you think of that, John?
Well, I think it was mentioned at the last community board, and it's mentioned here again in the response they've put to the council. Council's staff member at the last meeting wasn't ruling it out, so yeah, it's a possibility. I noticed Jackie Church is talking about devolving more power to community boards, but she doesn't say how much power, and she doesn't talk about this pay issue.
Yeah, well, if you did, you'd have to confront that.
That's a question for tonight as well.
And I think there's an issue for, like, who sets the pay? Is it local government New Zealand sets the pay for community boards and councillors?
I can't remember the exact title, but something like that, yes.
Yeah, but it's like a national body, and I think the idea that you would suddenly start paying all your community boards in all of the country more money, they would see as that is costing a lot of money. And how many community boards have we got in our district? Like 4 or 5?
Yep.
Yeah, so you can see, and they've all got 6 members, so you can see instantly that there's going to be a lot more money being spent. But on the other hand, are you spending it in a sensible place? Local knowledge. We keep talking constantly here about how staff who don't live in Raglan couldn't possibly know. It's not pointing the finger at them. They just don't know the area so well, and lots of things they don't know. The community board is the group that understands the community, and I think we benefit from them being more involved in what's happening with council decisions. John, we're at 10 o'clock. Have you got anything here you want to mention?
I think it's interesting to see in the Waters Governance Report, which isn't on the community board agenda, that land-based discharge options are being considered up at Mangatawhiri Road. So work is being done on that. And
that would be some private land?
Yes, on Raglan Land Company land.
Okay, so this is a way of dealing with our sewage that's not just treating it in ponds and then pumping it out to sea, but a land-based treatment. And
yep.
Raglan Land Company has, well, I don't say they've volunteered some land, but because there'll be money changing hands, no doubt.
Well, I think there's a negotiation for whether we can have a bypass or not, because it's...
I see. That's smart.
Part of it's talking about putting the sewer underneath the centre of the road.
Right, because of course the sewer, I mean, we know where our sewage ponds are now. That's where everything is directed to in town with the pipes. So they then have to take it from there over to land that's near Mangatawhiri Road. So there's a lot of pumping and action happening there. So interesting, yes, interesting. That John, briefly, what do you think about the fact that the future plans of Raglan have been determined by a developer as opposed to the community? And I don't want to besmirch the reputation of the developer, just they're a developer doing what they do. Someone has to plan what's happening in our community. Any comment, John?
Well, the council did start a structure plan in 2009, but then decided it was too difficult and gave up. So we still need one, because we've still got that problem. We don't know what we're going to do about parking or power supply or water supply or sewage or any of the other things if we get 12,000 people rather than 3,000.
Yeah, and do we want to bypass? If we're talking about a potential future population of 12,000 people in 50 years' time, maybe we do. Where do we want the bypass?
Who benefits? We'll still be using cars in 50 years' time.
Who benefits from the location of the bypass? Of course we will, John. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, you have to. We can only plan for what we know, I guess. That's the sensible answer. And yeah, if we banned roads, that certainly would help with the climate change issue. But I can't see that happening.
I'm looking at history now of 1923, a century ago.
Yeah,
and it's remarkable how quickly the change was made from using horse and cart to using the car.
Obviously, a lot of benefit perceived, or actual benefit, perceived and actual benefits for people who are using them. So,
and we've got all sorts of technology which is being developed at the moment that could change a lot of transport. So,
are you talking about like,
driverless cars, high-speed railways? There was a story about pods being designed for railway and travelling at high speed. There's all sorts of things which are on the horizon, and which of them is going to be around in 50 years' time, probably nobody knows. But
yeah, and that's why I say like the emphasis becomes on assuming business as usual, because you can't really guess the future unless there's something really you're really certain about. And I don't think, I certainly know a council doesn't feel that certain about the future.
Because lots of plans were done at the end of the 19th century as to how you dealt with horse manure on the roads. So
that's no longer a problem. Is it horse manure now? We only find it on our beaches. Oh, that's a joke.
Unfortunately, not always.
Yeah, true. Yeah. All right, well, look, John, thank you for coming in. I always ask you what you're doing tonight. Tonight you're interviewing our current regional councillor, Fred Litchback, who's standing again. You're going to talk about the... What are you going to talk about, John?
We'll find out what Fred's been doing.
Oh, I'll find out what Fred's been doing.
What Fred's planning to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the question that I think we're asking all the candidates. What have you done and what are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah, that's the basis of it, isn't it? All right, John, thanks for coming in. And we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. We'll be deep into the election time at that point, so we might be able to... The only data we get is how many people are voting, isn't it, during the election?
Yes.
Like that's, so that'll be something to gas bag about. Thanks for coming in, John. All right, folks. End of the show for the day. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back again tomorrow and continuing with the election stuff. I will be interviewing our current Deputy Mayor and mayoral candidate, Axel Beck, as well as I've got other things going on as well, actually. Shall I mention that? That's to be fair. Talking to Deb about the creative market and the Environment Centre as well. So it's not all politics. Who's got a meeting tonight?
They meet the candidates tonight.
Oh, yes, the meet the candidate, the mayoral and council candidates going to be in the town hall supper room at 7:30, I believe, John. Yeah. All right, thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.